Medicaid expansion would have extended health care coverage to South Dakotans who make too little money to afford health insurance, but too much money to qualify for state programs. With President-elect Donald Trump and a GOP Congress promising repeal or overhaul of the Affordable Care Act, South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard has declined to pursue Medicaid expansion in the state. SDPB's Keely Bultina focuses on education and healthcare reporting. She joins us now from our studios in Sioux Falls with more. Keely, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thanks, Lori.
Medicaid expansion is not happening. We talked about that last week. You're here again. We're still talking about it. How come?
Well, when you talked with Governor Dennis Dugard yesterday, he went into a lot of the history of why Medicaid expansion just wasn't feasible, especially with the new Trump White House saying there may be a lot of changes to the Affordable Care Act and even to Medicaid and Medicare. So the other thing he said was, you know, he's looked for several years for ways that they could expand Medicaid, and without this sort of federal support, he says, it's very expensive. We still don't have the money. So when he says that, we have to pay attention to the fact that if it's too expensive for the state, then where is the money coming from now? Or is it just not happening? Well, it is happening. The cost of medical care for this population that a lot of people refer to as the working poor is just being absorbed in other areas. And so it's rippling throughout the rest of healthcare. So I called up a couple of people just to find out how this is happening. One of them is Tim Rave. He's the executive director of public policy for Sanford Health, and he kind of explains to us, without Medicaid expansion, what we do now.
So now it remains as it is today. Those individuals and families that really struggle to pay sometimes some very high health care bills, Sanford Health System and, you know, obviously other health systems and hospitals have several financial assistance programs in place to help those folks work through a pathway to help them accomplish, you know, taking care of those bills. And that results in hospitals having a, you know, fairly substantial bad debt every year of bills that are not covered by anyone.
So, Keely, what's at stake here? Why should we care if people can't pay their bills to these big hospitals?
There are a couple of main reasons. The first is obviously money, right? So health systems claim that they use money for other programs. So it's they have a charity fund. They often expend all of that. They do cover a lot of these bills and write them off. But they also have different things just as part of the business of running hospitals and clinics and health systems. And so if those costs go up, eventually those hospital systems are going to have to charge more. Now, you may not individually see more because your insurance covers it. But that means that insurance companies are going to be paying more. And then insurance companies are going to jack up premiums for people who have coverage. So we're already paying for this population is the argument. Deb Fisher-Clemens is vice president of Avera Health, and she explains this in that she says, yeah, these are big hospital systems, but they spend 80% of what they get on workers.
Everything that we do with our finances really is going back to our employees, into our facilities, into our services and programs. So if in fact there's less resources available, it will impact our ability to with our employees and our facilities and our services. I mean, that's true of every healthcare provider and system out there.
Fisher-Clemens says that people also need to remember that these health systems are systems. They're not just the sprawling buildings and campuses that you see in places like Sioux Falls. She points to things like small hospitals or clinics in tiny rural towns. She says those are expensive to run. They're less efficient in operations and getting people there, but they're necessary for public health. So part of that money could be going to these sorts of efforts, is her explanation.
So I want to get to the second reason. You mentioned money being one, but before we do that, I know there's somebody listening who's saying, well, how much do those CEOs and executives get paid? But that's not enough to really solve the problem, is it?
No, I mean, this isn't going to be a situation where you could just eliminate from the top, you know, several thousand dollars and go ahead and make that up. And I don't know that. I mean, I'm not lobbying on behalf of the health systems, but when you're looking at this, to just say, well, let's cut all of our top people and save $1 million there, that does not solve this problem. So Governor Dugard is right. This problem is big.
Let's go to the second reason. Money is the first reason. What's the other?
The other one is general wellness. And it seems pretty simple, but we always hear about how preventative care and early intervention is better because it's more efficient money-wise, but it's also better for people's health. It's easy. I mean, cancer is the easiest one we think of. Stage one versus stage four. When you hear that it's stage one, you know, okay, great, we caught it early, we can handle this. That's true for many, many different ailments. And better health for the people who currently don't have health coverage is important, but also, even if you have insurance, think about what that means for you. So these people are waiting with simple things until they get big. They wind up in the ER. It could have been solved elsewhere. But what if that's time when you're also waiting in the ER and they could have been healthier and now you're waiting for your health care? Or think about things like if people get strep throat. We know that in certain cases that can affect the heart. That's why we treat it with antibiotics, right? So if somebody doesn't go to the doctor for strep throat because they figure, well, it'll just resolve on their own, I can't pay for this, then they're walking around spreading that when they could have had it, had that sort of containment if they had just sought that primary care initiative. So that means that we're dealing with a healthier, happier population, not just for this working poor, but also for everybody who, you know, gets health insurance through their employer or through the state or something like that.
Is there any ideas out there floating around on how to make some of these things happen now?
So last week we talked about how I didn't hear any. Now I have heard about at least one that Deb Fisher Clemens is able to talk about. You know, I should say that health advocates across the board are reminding us they're not done with this. They say that we need to keep pushing innovative solutions. But one concrete suggestion that I've heard now a few times is this concept. Avera calls it coordinated care. Deb Fisher Clemens says the program started with people who were on government assistance about 4 years ago, and they had to have things like a minimum of 2 chronic conditions and a certain number of medicines. And then they pulled together this group of professionals, of medical professionals who are able to care for these people's needs. And now she says Avera has put additional people into this method who are the working poor, who don't have insurance and are also not Medicaid people.
If we can figure out ways to keep them out of the emergency room and provide their care in a better way, we put them into the program. But how it started was really a partnership with the state, with Medicaid specifically. And we actually have some patients who are insured as well. If they have high chronic needs and lots of medications, we want them to have a primary care home, and we want them to have a team that really looks at all of their needs, their transportation, their medication needs, their social needs.
And Fisher Clemens says that they're looking at incorporating mental health services here, too. And you'll notice it all comes back to this concept of getting people in early with a primary care physician to stop things from getting so bad that they have to take more drastic measures like the emergency room, which is bad for health and also more costly. And Fisher Clemens says that this might be one of those ways that it's not expanding Medicaid, but it would be an opportunity where the state could put some money and work with local providers that this kind of medical service could help push people into that preventative care, which drives up wellness care and also drives down the cost.
Keely Boltina is SDPB's education and healthcare reporter. Thanks for being here today.
You're welcome.